ladies and gentlemen, I think that you appreciate that I feel a little bit like Solzhenitsyn must have felt when called to the higher authorities of the Soviet Writers' Union. He was supposed to defend himself against non-Marxism, and I'm supposed to defend myself against non-capitalism. I must admit to you that it would have been a very heavy, difficult task to do so had the organizers of this meeting not provided me with an excellent excuse. They mentioned in the statement that we are supposed to be for or against that capitalism, that capitalist ideology, such and such. But insofar as capitalism is an ideology, I am, of course, against it, because I think that we all here are against ideologies. And I further assume that those scholars who put this program together knew what they did when they used the word capitalist ideology. Had they used merely the word capitalism, or free enterprise, or the right to property, I would be here almost speechless. Because of course I agree with all of us here, with all our friends on this table, even on my left, that free enterprise and that the right to property are essentials to a dignified human life. I've traveled all around the world several times, visiting many, many countries, and I found that on balance, free enterprise is, in most instances, I didn't say all, I said in most instances, in under such and such circumstances, with such and such a political, cultural, moral, traditional background, actually was the best system. But you notice that I have built around this statement a number of provisos. The free enterprise is not necessarily best in every circumstance, is not necessarily best in every historical situation, is not necessarily best in the framework of the tradition and of the cultural patterns of given societies. So therefore, to make of it a capitalist ideology, to make of it, that is, if we mean what we say, if the organizers meant what they formulated, namely capitalist ideology, then we must, all men of good faith and of realism, we must agree that there is no such system that works under every circumstance. I really question if anybody would dare say that such and such an ism, be that Marxism, be that existentialism, and so on and so forth, and I also mentioned here capitalism, is good under any circumstances. This is misunderstanding the nature of man and the nature of the fact that man is a historical animal and not merely a calculator and not merely a man insisting on private property. Because we have seen civilizations in which private property was not the first necessity or the first thing on the agenda. Let's not commit the ideological mistake that Marxists and others do, who say that man under any circumstances is made this way and that way, or that this and this is man's primary requirement. So let's not say, before we examine the concept, that freedom is the primary thing for man. For one thing, I would say that security is the primary importance for man. And I could mention a number of other things which by no means should be considered as less than freedom. In other words, this ideology of freedom, and I insist on the term here ideology, of saying that freedom under any circumstances, I would say no. And I shall try to argue, for example, for censorship. And I think that most of us, I hope, would agree that under certain circumstances, while the merchandise can flow freely and there should be production, distribution, and so on, But if we look at the other merchandise, for example, ideas, well, ideas should not be guaranteed absolute freedom. I imagine that in this audience are a number of life, right to life militants, and I don't think that they would agree with the position that under any circumstances, freedom of abortion is the right thing to do. In other words, let's not make a fetish even of that idea in which all of us commune, namely the necessity of freedom. Yes, but within certain frameworks, within certain provisos. Let's not make a fetish of even of freedom. I know that it is a very dangerous statement to make here, but nevertheless, I think that this had to be said at the beginning. Now, one of our dearest mentor, now dead, in fact, just exactly 10 years ago, Wilhelm Röpke, wrote repeatedly, that capitalism, or for that matter any system, cannot exist and cannot fulfill its notable, important, essential functions, except within Christian moral presuppositions. Now, I just heard Mr. McCann say that capitalism promotes, in fact, is responsible for, I don't quite remember the terms that he used, morality, honesty, and so on and so forth. I submit that it is not capitalism which does that, not free enterprise which does that, but Christianity which did that to capitalism. Because if you look at history, namely even, which is very near to us in sympathy and in tradition, namely the Greeks and the Romans, look at the Roman capitalist, the Roman senator or knight who had vast properties, let's say, in Campania or in Sicily. He was a capitalist. He used slaves. He mercilessly exploited those slaves. He mercilessly crucified those slaves. He was a capitalist. Now, what, didn't he have all freedom to exploit those people who were at his disposal or the land that was at his disposal? Of course, this is good capitalism. But then came Christianity and said, yes, capitalism, yes, free enterprise. But the capitalist and the free enterpriser, be that a merchant or an agriculturist or a landlord, have certain duties. And these duties do not follow from capitalism, do not follow from free enterprise, they follow from Christianity, or Hebrew Christianity, Judeo-Christianity, and mind you, not even Greco-Judeo-Christianity. We have to leave the Greeks aside here, no matter how much we admire them in every other respect. In other words, it is not capitalism which generated on its own the virtues and the values that we all admire, recognize, and live by, but it was something else, something that was disparagingly referred to by Mr. McCann, namely this theism by which he, being a very tactful man, as my fellow Hungarian, I must say that this was very tactful, he did not say Christianity, he said theism, but I think we all understood. Now, so I would like again to repeat or to summarize what I have said so far, that by all means free enterprise, and this is within the possibility of all of us to observe all over the world. But again, let's not make it into a universal norm, a historical norm, something that we have arrived at in 1776, Adam Smith, and ever since have developed and further refined, and that's the last word of history. There is no such thing as last word of history, and we will see other systems, and we will see that we may maintain freedom even under other systems, although, paradoxically, I maintain and insist that free enterprise in the 19th, 20th centuries, I don't know about the 21st, I very much suspect that the outlook is not as optimistic as Mr. McCann suggested that it is, but we will be able to retain a great deal of our values and freedom even under other systems, as mankind did not wait for capitalism to already propose those wonderful things and to live by those wonderful things. For example, we heard about Hobbes and Locke. We all recognize especially the virtues of the second. But let's not forget that there is a great difference between the way, let's say, Nero treated his fellow citizens or his subjects, and the way that Louis XIV, an absolutist monarch, did. In other words, not only capitalism in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries did well by men and secured a certain and a great amount of freedom, but even absolutism was not as absolute in the 17th century because it was a Christian century than it was before Christ or in the first century after Christ of Nero. In other words, Christianity permeated not only capitalism, it also permeated absolutism. So if tomorrow an absolutist government comes to power in vast parts of the world, including the West, and I mean here absolute in a relative sense, if you permit me to say, like Louis XIV, well, mankind has flourished under Louis XIV too. And it is only cultural and unforgivable provincialism which makes us say that was because it was in the past, that is to be rejected. And only what we have had in the 19th and 20th century, that is the greatest achievement of mankind. I solemnly declare that this is not so. Mankind did not wait for the 20th century to be happy. In fact, I would successfully argue, I think, that in the 20th century we have known things far, far worse than in any previous century. So the hope that Mr. McCann suggested for the 21st and other centuries does not come necessarily from the survival of capitalism. It comes from the survival of free and value-respecting men who may not be full free enterprisers and still be full human beings. Now, having said this, let me give you a few propositions which I would like to be on record when the day arrives that I am also tried by the Soviet Writers' Union or by you present here. Capitalism has focused the interest of men on material goals, material goods as a goal in itself. Mind you, I don't consider this something horrible. I don't mean this as an indictment. I'm merely saying that here we have, like in all matters human, something that is not perfect. And while we recognize, and I subscribe to much that Mr. McCann said, we recognize the great virtues, the great progress, advancement, and so on, that we have achieved in the West under free enterprise, I also call your attention, and you cannot not know it if you go out on the street and look around, namely that it has focused men's ideas and justified men's interest in material goods, which, again, in that theistic morality, is not necessarily the highest thing. The second is that capitalism and free enterprise and liberalism, I do not separate these terms, liberalism and capitalism, both are ideologies. Liberalism has also made of man, very subtly, master of himself and of nature, and against the biblical injunction that man should be the steward of nature. Under the free enterprise system, we have literally pillaged the earth. You will now call me a cultist namely of ecology. Yes, I am. I think that it is in the Bible that man should not destroy the earth and its resources. Mind you, I'm not arguing. Please, this I would like to write here in letters of fire. I'm not suggesting that socialism is better. Socialism is worse. But that does not make capitalism good. Socialism exploits the earth, the resources of nature and of men in a manner immeasurably worse than liberalism and capitalism and free enterprise. Because socialism produces as much, that is, creates as much energy, as much movement as liberalism, but it is waste. It goes to waste. Both Mr. McCann and I can tell you how much is produced in Hungary and immediately wasted. So there is no, I don't try to equate socialism with the biblical injunction. I'm merely saying that capitalism also did that. it exploited man, and even more than man, it exploited nature. The next thing that I would say, it encouraged mass culture, which we all abhor. It was, you are consumer, you are king, the consumer king. Whatever you want, we give you. And if you can't think of anything, well, we will invent it for you. I don't think that anybody in his right mind would agree with this and would say that it is a wonderful thing to destroy traditional values, to destroy the traditional loyalties, to encourage the mushrooming, the multiplication, the obscene multiplication of merchandise. And I fully agree with Marx when he said that the fetishism of merchandise is one of the capital sins of capitalism. Producing merchandise in order to produce more merchandise, in order to produce more merchandise, and what can be more obscene than built-in obsolescence? Then, as I come back to this idea, which is very dear to me, if we are consequent capitalists, and it must be, because if it is an ideology, we must be consequent. If we produce goods, then by the same movement, we also produce ideas. Now, would you agree really with me that any idea that is produced should be freely produced and allowed to be freely distributed? I'm using here the economic terms. Ideas are produced in such and such universities or in San Diego by Mr. Marcuse. Are we really agreeing? I do not, right away, that this should be free, that he should be free to produce and distribute his ideas. I say censorship, 100 times censorship, but not allowing this kind of thing. Why obscenity? Why pornography? And I mean here above the counter, because under the counter pornography is human. But above the counter pornography, the kind that we have today in movies, in theaters, in magazines, in displays, in posters, that is, of course, something that must be censored. And if we begin with censoring, then he will say, well, who will do the censoring? Well, I would say the state. I don't find anything horrible with that. Mankind has always lived with that. That the community, by common agreement, in the ways for which the structure of that particular community or state can account for, it should, of course, forbid certain things, because the forbidding, the taking away the freedom is much more valuable than to allow that freedom. We gain very little, if we think about it, with the ideas of Marcuse. We gain far more by forbidding the ideas of Marcuse. And this is just an example, nor am I going to stand here and justify censorship in every case. And I begin with quoting Solzhenitsyn, or with referring to Solzhenitsyn, I will certainly not justify the Soviet state to censor Solzhenitsyn. We would have to come to some kind of an agreement of what is a reasonable position on censorship and what is a reasonable censorship. I'm merely arguing for the principle that freedom should not be pursued endlessly. Now, I could go on with this for a long time, but Mr. McCann's talk to 20 minutes, I will try also. And therefore, I should address myself to very, very briefly to the second part of the proposition that we are supposed to debate, namely that capitalism has not only been the best antidote, whatever the term is, to Marxism, but also to communist expansionism. That makes me laugh, because look at Portugal. What did the Capitalist International, where is it? What did the Capitalist International do to save Portugal? What has capitalists ever done to save one part of the West or of any other part free? It was the capitalists who helped Lenin go through Germany and enter Russia. They subsidized the Bolshevik Revolution. Where are the various leftist magazines, leftist film festivals, leftist cultural festivals? Who is financing them? Capitalists, all of them. Who is destroying vast numbers of beauties in European cities after the war and the attempts of rebuilding? Capitalist entrepreneurs who, rushing for making a buck, made horrors out of cities like Paris. Now, but this is cultural. But again, political. Show me the capitalist, or the capitalist conspiracy, for that matter, or again the capitalist international, that they have saved parts of the West that can be saved. And then I will say, yes, indeed, that's an excellent antidote against communist expansion. I have not seen the capitalists, but I tell you whom I saw saving or trying to save Portugal. And I think that Portugal is now saved, not for capitalism, but for other Western values, of which capitalism will be one. It was a socialist international. Now, my rhetoric seems to carry me away. It is not carrying me away. I'm not trying to argue, and please bear with me, and please accept. I'm not arguing either for Marxism or for communism or for anything else but freedom, mitigated freedom, not just freedom, but all the other things, insofar as freedom is compatible with them too, not putting freedom as a kind of absolute value. But I must admit, and we all of us who read the newspapers and to observe the international political scene, that there is a socialist international, the Olof Palme of Sweden, whom I despise. He's a disgusting man and a disgusting socialist. Helmut Schmidt, the German chancellor, whom I despise much less. Mitterrand in France, well, let's not go into that. But after all, this international, whether it is Bruno Kreisky in Austria and the others, who went into Portugal, who poured money into the Portuguese Socialist Party, who then managed, of course, together with the Catholic Church, together with the common sense, the Catholic common sense of the Portuguese nation, but they too entered and managed to put at least a barrier up to the communist takeover. I have not seen or heard of the capitalists doing that also. But I'm told that it is time, and I guess the way I'm going, it is really better if I stop. Thank you very much.